Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, and my guest today is Matthew Gallagher, president of the Goldsecker Foundation. Welcome, Matthew.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Matthew D. Gallagher serves as the president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation. Mr. Gallagher provides executive direction for the foundation as it pursues its mission to serve the Baltimore community by investing in its institutions and people. The Goldsecker Foundation has nearly $100 million in assets and has provided over $80 million in grants to more than 450 nonprofit organizations and projects in the Baltimore metropolitan area. Before joining the foundation in 2013, Mr. Gallagher served as chief of staff to Maryland Governor Martin J. O'Malley and was responsible for managing the day-to-day activities of the executive branch of the Maryland state government, including 18 major cabinet agencies and the governor's office. Prior to his position in Maryland state government, Mr. Gallagher served as director of CityStat, Baltimore's nationally recognized public sector accountability program that in 2004 received the prestigious Innovations in American Government Award from Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government and the Council for Excellence in Government. Before joining Baltimore City Government, Mr. Gallagher served as project director for the Greater Baltimore Committees and President's Roundtable Private Sector Assessment, Managing for Success, and served in Philadelphia Mayor Edward G. Rendell's administration, including as an assistant deputy mayor. Prior to his government service in Philadelphia, Mr. Gallagher worked in educational programs for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Mr. Gallagher was born and raised in Baltimore. He went to Calvert Hall and LaSalle University. He attended the University of Pennsylvania, and he taught undergraduate and graduate courses in public policy and administration at the University of Baltimore and the University of Baltimore, Baltimore County, as well as lectured at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and the University of Pennsylvania's Fells Center of Government. Mr. Gallagher resides in Baltimore City's Roland Park neighborhood. Welcome again, and thank you for coming.
It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit in your own words about yourself.
I'm just a kid who grew up in Baltimore and have always been looking for opportunities to give back, and have been very fortunate to have opportunities to serve in Baltimore City government and state government. And recently I made a transition to the foundation world, and it's really a great privilege to serve as president and CEO of the Goldsecker Foundation, which tries to do a lot of good things in Baltimore.
Did you always have a leaning toward public service, or when you were in school, did you think that that's where you wanted to head?
Well, I think when I started out, I wanted to play third base for the Orioles, but reality set in.
Center field for me.
Reality set in, and I just started to think about other ways to contribute. I was a big fan of Mayor Schaefer's in Baltimore, and just really came to love cities, and Baltimore in particular, given it was my hometown.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Goldsecker Foundation.
Well, the Goldsecker Foundation's been around for about 40 years. It's named after Morris Goldsecker, who passed away in 1973 and left a very significant fortune to the foundation. He had no heirs. He never married. And he left all of his resources to the creation of this foundation, which over the last 40 years has been making strategic grants all around Baltimore City, trying to improve the lives and institutions in Baltimore.
Well, tell us a little bit about what the Goldsecker Foundation has accomplished and then go on to its current work.
Sure. Primarily the Goldsecker Foundation has invested broadly in community development, targeting specific neighborhoods around the city like Bel Air Edison, Hamilton, Lauraville, Highland Town. We recently made an investment in West Baltimore in the area around the University of Maryland Biopark. You know, generally, the community development investments of the foundation have been guided by ideas that there are really great opportunities to improve neighborhoods, to improve the livability of the city, hopefully attract and grow a solid middle class. And you can do that by bringing people together, investing in good institutions, and just really promoting Baltimore as a place to live, work, and play. The foundation also makes a series of investments in education. We've invested in a number of Baltimore City public schools, some charter schools, even some parochial schools. And each year we also make investments in Johns Hopkins University and Morgan to promote scholarship efforts, particularly for local students.
briefly talk about some of your programs, like the Central Baltimore Partnership.
Well, Central Baltimore Partnership is a very innovative and forward-looking collaborative effort among many of the institutions that are loosely housed between Penn Station, you know, downtown on the south, and Hopkins on the north. And it's an attempt to really bring together all of the various stakeholders that are in that particular geographic area. It's a part of the city that has a lot of strategic importance. It's adjacent to downtown. It's adjacent to Hopkins and MICA. It has a great access to the train station and the MARC rail stations. And it's really a place that I think there's tremendous opportunity to grow, both in terms of residential population and in new business development.
Yeah, I've seen it grow exponentially, really, because – and I know the area pretty well, and it really has developed. I mean, you have Artscape, which has been around for a while, but what University of Baltimore is doing with new buildings, what you're trying to do in engaging neighborhoods all the way over Greenmount Avenue, touch upon a little bit with that.
Well, it's hard to drive through this area without encountering just tremendous amounts of redevelopment going on right now. You look at the new design school that recently went up. You look at what's happening along North Avenue. Station North is a thriving arts district right now. And then you look at places like Remington, where there's some tremendous efforts going on right now to rehabilitate some of the aging housing stock, putting in affordable housing for people who are recently out of college, people who are coming to Baltimore for things like Teach for America. There's a lot of creative energy going on in Central Baltimore right now, and the Goldsecker Foundation has been very proud to help promote that and nurture that type of growth.
What's interesting to me, too, that it's not only education and job development, but the arts are developing, too. There are new homes for artists around the area.
I think that, you know, MICA has been a creative force in that particular area. Fred Lazarus has been, you know, a transformational leader for that organization. And it's a fun place to be. And I think when you think about, you know, the creative class, or so they're called, you know, people want to be near other artists. They like to be exposed to public art. There's just a lot of creativity. And this is a great town if you're interested in music and theater and other forms of art. And there's just a particularly great concentration in this part of the city right now.
One of my objectives in starting this radio station is that I think that many issues can be approached as developing a blueprint or a business plan, and of course, job development and neighborhood development. Can you tell me what is your plans for that area 3 months from now to like a year from now? I won't say 3 to 5 years. I'm sure you have that, but right. You know, just in the short term right now.
Well, I would hesitate to call it my plans. I would call it the plans of the many stakeholders are in that particular area. You know, City Hall under the leadership of Mayor Rawlings Blake, the institutional leadership, you know, Ron Daniels at Johns Hopkins, Fred Lazarus at MICA, you know, the really creative people at Station North, at the Maryland Film Festival, just to name a few of the really key stakeholders that are there. They are trying to make this a very livable part of the city, one where it's easy to get around, where it's very safe, it's well lit. There's a good mix of residential and commercial development, and, you know, really try to capture, you know, some of the great things that are happening at Hopkins, some of the great things that are happening downtown in Mount Vernon, and really link it all up so that you have like this really this spine of strength that runs all the way from Federal Hill through the Inner Harbor and Mount Vernon and Station North and Central Partnership all the way up to Hopkins, Homeland, Guilford, Roland Park. It can be a real area of strength from the city in which you can build out.
It sounds like there are plans in effect to really incorporate all the areas in Baltimore, especially the disenfranchised ones, for them. Tell me a little bit about the neighborhood school partnerships.
The neighborhood school partnerships were really the brainchild of a colleague of mine at the Goldsecker Foundation, Laurie Latuda. And I think it's an acknowledgement that when families make locational decisions, when families decide that they want to buy in Baltimore City or they want to stay in Baltimore City, that the quality of the schools and the public schools makes a big difference in their decision-making process. And as we were, as a foundation, making investments in some of these strategic neighborhoods, places where we thought they had a lot of strengths, we thought it was really important to develop, you know, strategic partnerships with the schools in those areas, to make some investments to try to promote and better market those schools, and really just try to educate communities about how competitive Baltimore City public schools can be and how competitive city living can be. I think from an affordability standpoint, from, you know, a commute time standpoint, access to parks and amenities, there are a lot of great things that are available to city residents. And I think we've got to do a better job promoting those things.
Well, point in fact, right before your interview, I have a program called Urban Mom. And it's an urban mother who talks to people in neighborhoods about raising kids in the city. And she expressly stipulated that her kids had to be raised in city schools. And they talked about how this kind of really rounds your character, too. You know, not that it doesn't in the county or anything. It's a whole different perspective, you know, of raising their kids in the city.
I think there's a lot of people like that. And I think that there's some great organizations out there right now, like the Downtown Baltimore Family Alliance against DBFA, which is really putting a particular focus on promoting city living to families. And for many young families right now, or many young people, they get married, they might buy a house in Canton, they might stay there till they have one or two kids. And then too many of them are moving out to Baltimore County. They're moving to Rogers Forge or Stoneleigh. And those are great and fantastic communities, but we have to do a better job of retaining people in Baltimore. And I think that the more they learn about the quality of the city schools, the access to amenities, and how we can be really competitive in terms of affordability with the home prices in Baltimore, that we can compete for those types of people.
This area, you had a place here
in
Fells Point. And it
hope
is,
to again someday.
Right. It's grown leaps and bounds. I was here in the 90s, and I had a house up on Pratt Street, and there was trouble with drug dealers and such like that. But there are places around here that are just that used to be, you know, urban renewal type areas, and now are just really, you know, people are coming in and they're staying. That's the thing. You've got Patterson Park, which is gorgeous, and the accessibility to everything too. The Target is opened up down the street. Things are happening around here, and hopefully that goes to other neighborhoods too.
I think that you know, people who are getting out of college today, they're driving less. They're very sophisticated users of public transit. You know, they've got apps on their phones to tell you when the next circulator bus is coming.
Yeah, I love the circulator.
They want to live in walkable communities. And, you know, Baltimore is a very compact place. And, you know, you have the ability to get around. And, you know, the expansion of the circulator, I think, is just going to be fantastic for Baltimore. And we have to look to exploit those types of opportunities.
Just briefly, where's the circulator expanding to initially?
As a result of some things that the state and the city did earlier this year, the circulator is going to be expanding its footprint all the way up to University Parkway to basically encompass the Johns Hopkins campus. And there are ongoing discussions about expanding its reach into places like Hamden, you know, just to really try to improve the connectedness between all of these communities.
That would be terrific. When you're talking about expanding around Midtown, it stops now at the train station.
It does.
So to expand farther out, and then you've got the light rail and on the light, and the, what is it? What is the cross rail that's happening too? I forget.
The red line.
The red line.
The
yes,
red line.
You know? So it's good because transportation, I mean, that's key to expansion and to development too. Let's talk a little bit about the Healthy Neighborhoods Project.
Sure. You know, Healthy Neighborhoods is a great organization that's been around for a while. It works to really stabilize about 40 neighborhoods around the city. It offers a variety of mortgage and loan products to prospective and current homeowners to try to, you know, make these communities more attractive. They do a great job of kind of cobbling together the various types of incentives that are available for new home buyers or people who are interested in renovating their house. They will, in some instances, provide, you know, loans to homeowners above the assessed value of the house so that they can make improvements that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do. And it's really played a pivotal role in stabilizing, you know, what some people call these middle neighborhoods of the city by, you know, just being aggressive, working with the community associations, tackling problem properties, and you know, really helping people get into sustainable mortgages.
I saw your commentary in the Sun Papers about vacant lots, and I think Healthy Neighborhoods kind of ties into that because, I mean, we're talking about developing neighborhoods and giving people pride in their neighborhoods. So talk a little bit about that. First, talk about how Healthy Neighborhoods are going to expand. You've got a lot of people that are working with you, a lot of people that are doing that. And these plans have an A to Z.
Right.
So tell me about, in terms of time, maybe just, you know, what you hope to accomplish in some of the more disenfranchised areas.
Baltimore at one time had, you know, about 1 million people in it. And over the course of the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, you know, Baltimore suffered enormous loss in population. And while over the last decade, the population has stabilized around 620, 630,000, basically, you know, one in three people that were here 50 years ago have left. And in its wake, Baltimore has a very significant issue with vacant buildings. You know, the number varies any given day, but there are approximately 16,000 vacant properties in the city.
You say one in eight.
Approximately one in eight.
Jeez.
Yep, rounding. Baltimore is not about to have 1 million people as their population level again. We've got to make some strategic decisions in terms of what we're going to do to address that vacancy. Sure, it would be great to attract a lot of new residents into the city, but this isn't housing stock that's available for people to move into right now. These are effectively uninhabitable properties. And I think that the city has to make some strategic decisions in terms of where it's going to focus its efforts on redevelopment, where it's going to try to create pocket parks, where it's going to land bank, you know, land for future development opportunities, and really be thoughtful and strategic. And, you know, to her credit, Mayor Rawlings-Blake has, you know, made an enormous investment, is contemplating an enormous investment of about $150 million over the next 10 years to demolish an unprecedented level of properties across the city. You know, the mayor's 10-year financial plan, which she unveiled about a year ago, calls for the demolition of about 4,000 properties over the next 10 years. And for some perspective, the city in recent years has only been able to knock down about 250 to 300 properties a year.
Really?
So it's a real significant increase. And, you know, having worked in City Hall and worked at the State House, you know, now being active through the foundation in a lot of kind of distressed neighborhoods around the city and some neighborhoods that are kind of in the middle and doing okay, I have a hard time, you know, not thinking about this issue. I think it's really pivotal to the city's future. And, you know, whether you live in one of these communities and you have a blighted property on your block, whether you own a property and you're having a difficult time selling it or increasing its value, or whether you're a business person who brings prospective clients and employees in on the train, vacancy in Baltimore, it's a hard issue to ignore. And what I hope to do with my commentary in The Sun was try to get people focused on some of the numbers. You know, I'm a data person. I'm a quant person. I want to really get inside the economics of demolition. I want to figure out what the opportunities are to drive down the unit cost. I want to figure out what the opportunities are to increase contracting opportunities, so low and no skilled, you know, people who have had a tough time getting into the workforce can somehow get plugged in on demolition activity and hopefully use that as kind of a stepping stone to working in the construction trade. I think there's just a lot of opportunities associated with demolition, and I hope that my piece will help contribute to that conversation right now.
It made it interesting for me because you talked about that it's less expensive to raise buildings than to renovate them. And anybody who's owned a house that's more than 50 years old knows it's a continual process in renovating things, and it's out of pocket money all the time. Not to say that new buildings don't have problems too, but the whole thing that I was interested in with your piece too is that it's vacant buildings, but it's also developing neighborhoods. There's all these various steps that you need to take in terms of job development, neighborhood development, making people proud of their areas, and making businesses want to relocate there too. Mm-hmm. I mean, established businesses, new businesses, but it's got to be a plan to A to Z. And a lot of things you see are these programs that start and stop, and then, you know, what happens now?
It's a lot about taking some of those programs to scale. I mean, I would say that demolition in and of itself is not a strategy. but demolition is a great complement to redevelopment strategies. It's a great complement to greening strategies. It's a great complement to efforts to improve public safety, whether it's eliminating nuisance properties or whether it's reducing the risk of fires and arson. It can really plug into and complement many of the things that are going on in the city right now. And in terms of making land available to anchor institutions, whether it's a hospital or a university or potentially a business that wants to relocate and expand, we have to be strategic about where those best opportunities are. We got to try to clear the land. We have to gain title to the land. And we have to, really facilitate the type of development that neighborhoods want.
Right. And we have to make it attractive.
We do.
To do that.
We
Again,
do.
There's a whole social issues and everything like that, too, are incorporated in there. It's very interesting to me. And if you're up for it, I would like to host a lot of programs on this and what feel like you want to do that.
Be happy to talk to you anytime.
Because current situation right now is that I'm recording all my shows because I've just started and I've just on 2 weeks now. When I go live and record it, I want to do forums and get all these people together and do a blueprint or business plan and then say, this is what we want to do. We check it in 3 months, 6 months, a year. Would you be interested in something like
that? I think it'd be great. I think, there's a lot of interest and love for Baltimore, from people who've visited here, people who've learned about it. I wish there was such a program when I was living in other cities and going to school outside of Maryland. It's a great way to stay connected with what's going on here. And I think particularly now, new generations get their information in different ways. It's not just about the newspaper and the 6 o'clock news anymore. The ability to, hear your station no matter where you are around the world. It's a great benefit to the city, and I think you're going to have a great listening audience.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And also, I used to be one, and I hate the term, there are a lot of expats out there, Baltimoreans that are living all over the world, and it gives them an opportunity to find out what's going on here. I lived overseas for 10 years, and I'm back last year, and I can see all this development, and it is quite impressive, from Harbor East on. But I think neighborhoods need to be developed, and that's the kind of thing that I'm feeling passionate about. I want to thank you for coming in. I've been talking to Matthew Gallagher, the president of the Goldsecker Foundation. Matt, go Calvert Hall.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.